Welcome film industry professionals, film buffs, and aspiring filmmakers. This is the Cinema Pathway Podcast, presented by Paradoxical Films and brought to you by Cine Videotech. I'm your host, Michael Angelo Malachi, and co-host, Miss Dana Della Camera. Join us on a journey behind the camera, and most importantly, beyond what we know about cinema and the craft of filmmaking. Sit down, grab your popcorn, drink your soda, and let's ride the cinema road together with Cinema Pathway. Welcome to listeners across the world to your new film family Cinema Pathway Podcast with your host, Michael Angelo Malachi. And guys, I'm truly excited, but above all, I'm honored to introduce our new co-host, Miss Dana Della Camera. Which literally means in Spanish, from the camera. So how perfect to have someone whose name is Dana from the camera to talk about film. Welcome to the podcast. Now, Dana will be joining me to interview guests together and individually in the future. Dana has a wealth of experience in front of the camera as an actor, behind the camera as a writer, an assistant director, a casting director, and producer. Dana is also the current director of Arts Accelerator, a nonprofit organization dedicated to assisting emerging filmmakers like Mr. Lunet Ejin, helping them to accelerate their careers through networking events, film masterclasses and workshops, festivals, live script readings, and more. Dana, welcome to the show.
This is like a spicy podcast. Okay, thank you, Michael, for that. I mean, I just need to take you everywhere with me and just you can be introducing us all the time. I'm super honored to be here as the co-host, as your partner in crime. Thank you so much, Cinema Pathways. I'm super excited to be part of the film family and really highlight up-and-coming talent and really bring the film community together. This is what it's about, sharing our knowledge and expertise and resources that so that we all rise up together and put South Florida on the map for film, period.
Great speaking voice. Just hear that voice.
Let's go.
Right? I can like literally call like an operator and hear her voice. She's a perfect addition. Thank you so much for coming. Seriously. But as you know, the Cinema Pathway podcast is for film buffs, film lovers, film critics, film professionals, and creatives in the biz. You have found your new film family. Now, let's talk about this man to my left, Mr. Lunet Ejin, which I just learned literally like 5 minutes ago in French. Made me sound French, even though I have no idea how to speak French. All right. It is our pleasure to introduce the prolific filmmaker, Lunet Ejin, or Lunar Eugene. Lunar is an exceptional director, writer, and producer from Haiti. Lunar has also made a name for himself in the film industry with his talent and his passion for filmmaking, even with limited resources. His love for creating films began in 2008 with his short film, Employed. Now, Lunet is CEO of his own production company called Luniversal Productions. Not Universal, but Luniversal Productions. He is committed to unifying cultures through Black cinema and providing opportunities for local talent in the film industry. Ladies and gentlemen, please join us in giving us a beautiful, warm, amazing welcome to Lunar Eugene.
Man, you are awesome, bro. You're incredible. You're incredible, man. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm definitely honored.
Yeah?
I'm honored. Yes.
Okay. So you cutting up like right 5 minutes ago. Come on now.
I mean, this is dope, man. I'm excited, man. I'm excited. No, you two are wonderful people, man. Wonderful people. Even way before the interview, man, just us just really sharing together. And you can feel the love, the passion, the energy. And I love being around people who has that energy, man, because it does something to me. You know, it's important to be around positive people and not negative energy.
Brother, we want you to speak truth today. Are you ready to speak?
Oh, yes, man.
About this
can
film
you
industry?
Handle the truth.
Oh, I can handle
it.
That's what I always say. They ask for the truth, but can they handle the truth?
Oh, yeah.
Now, as our new co-host, I want to give you the honors of asking the very first question. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Michael. Okay. Yeah, so Lunar, let's get into it. So let's tell us about how it all started for you. Tell us about the beginning, you know, from childhood, your involvement in the arts, and really, how did you get on this pathway?
As far as childhood, as far as what I can remember, I came in the country in 1985. Before that, I remember, living with my aunt Felicia, and both of my parents was already here in the States. So I remember, of course, we had to go to school. We had no choice. Growing up, I never thought of filmmaking or anything. I mean, I was young because I came here when I was 9 years old. So for me, one thing that I did notice, I was very creative with my hands. Like I used to, if you're familiar with the Colgate tube thing, you know, it's made out of metal.
I used to take that
apart and create planes with that, create little items. I remember doing that. And I remember I used to sketch, draw a lot, you know. These are the things that I've always knew when it came about the art, you know. So fast forwarding, and, you know, so there wasn't much to my childhood when I was younger because both of my parents really took off and, you know, seeking for a better life and then to work and then bring their three kids over here. So my parents was very strict. It was really school, home, and church at the time. That's all I remember. So when I came over here, when I met my parents, again, we reunite. So now it's more like, going to school, then they force us to go to church, and they were Catholics. We were born and raised Catholics, but they were pushing us. There's this church bus that used to come and grab the kids in the neighborhood. So we were forced to go to church.
So wait a minute. So you say you work with your hands, right? That's how you became created, like a graphic designer, right? And of course, the music came from listening to choirs.
I think this is how I kind of fell into graphic design, because while I was here, I was always sketching. But people always used to say, oh, you're going to be great. You are an artist. You're going to make a lot of money. They say that stuff. But when you think about the arts, it's so broad. Like, there's so many things. Like, how do one even go and make money? And I remember my, 11th grade year teacher, I was in AP class. She told me, don't waste my time trying to do fine arts. They'll never make any money.
Uh-oh.
She scarred me, because at the time, I used to do a lot of oil painting and stuff like that, water painting. So I really didn't know what
else to do. So what did she tell you to do?
She didn't say anything. We took the class. We did clay. But she just said, find something else. Like, I was really shocked and disappointed at the time.
This is something, I don't know, I'm sorry. This really frustrates me about teachers, because teachers have such a huge role in students' lives. And sometimes teachers are the only lifeline that a child has to an adult that can see them. And in my opinion, it's not for you to judge or tell the child what to do. Like, let them be a kid, let them play, let them create, let them explore. Because it's so devastating for a child. Like, you just don't know the power that you have. And even, I guess I'm just more sensitive to it because I've had teachers that I've had similar circumstances and it just totally killed my light. And it took me a really long time to find it again. Yeah. So for any teachers out there listening,
we were just talking about
be
that
mindful, too, please.
Especially a film world, right? You have, just to piggyback what you're saying, I've had teachers who have elevated what was already inside of me saying, you can do this. You don't have to limit yourself just because you came from a certain background. Try different kinds of music. Try different kinds of acting. Try exploring and expanding your mind. But subsequently, I've also had teachers that are like, you come from here, so only you can do this box.
Yeah.
Have you ever felt that way? Where you felt trapped in a certain genre because of where you grow up or your experiences that deterred you to what a filmmaker that you are now?
I mean, I would say when it comes to our culture, you're either going to become a doctor or an attorney, these high paying jobs, but nothing really, they don't embrace the art like that. Cause, parents, they don't want their kids to struggle when it comes to money. So they just feels like by becoming a doctor or lawyer, you become one of those, you don't have to worry about money. You know, most parents are like that, but I don't feel like my parents really put that pressure onto us. They just wanted us to go to school. I wasn't even sure. I don't think they really dictated to us what we should go into, because when I graduated out of high school, I graduated, and me and my friend Wilmark at the time, we sitting down not knowing what we're going to get into. Now I'm talking to my guidance counselor, and she asked me, what do I love to do? I'm like, I love to sketch. I like to draw, but I don't know. Fine arts, I've heard they don't make any money. Then she said, have you heard of McFadden? I'm like, never heard of it. And I went there. When I got there and I entered the classroom, and I was like, whoa, this is the stuff that I saw, like I see on the bus. It's like designs, like posters. I'm like, ooh, oh yeah, I definitely want to do that. So that's how I got into graphic design, accidentally. I didn't know nothing about it. I used to see it, but I didn't know how they make it, you know, how they make posters, how to make, I see the buses and I see all these signs. And now that changes my whole life now. Like everywhere I go, I see scripts, I see fonts, like it replays in my head constantly.
So we also heard that you had a short time as a Christian rapper. Is this true?
Yeah, that happened. Like, this is like fast forwarding. Well, I graduated class of 95. A year after that, I met someone and went into a church. And that church was actually a cult, believe it or not. I ended up there and it was a group of friends that I saw that was actually rapping on stage. And I saw that and I was like, man, I would love to do that. So they formed like a little group and I tried to get in that group and I started learning how to rap. Rap was the music that I listened to a lot when I came from Haiti. I was listening to like the Ghetto Boys, like, you know, and Wu-Tang came at a later time. So for me, I'm a Wu-Tang fan. So rap has always been a big part of me. So yes. Once I saw friends that was actually doing it, I wanted to do it. And that's how I kind of got into it.
You know, special about being a rapper, though, because you learn three things. Content, right? You have to have what to write down, your flow and your delivery. And if you think about it in all films, that is a majority of what you do as a filmmaker. How did it help you being a rapper, learning content and basically delivery all in one as a filmmaker?
All of that helped. I mean, even started from the way how my path was, you know, I think it was very unique and ordained by God, because being a graphic artist, one, which is the visual, and then now you have the music part of it, and being able to have my own studio. I knew nothing about audio, or I never went to school for audio, but my passion led me to have my own small little studio in the garage. I produce everything from the writing, the creating of the music, and with a little bit of help from friends, created everything. And then when I actually produce everything, you know, what I want is I want to put my music out. And then I told my ex-wife at the time, I said, you know what? Let's go to Sam Ash. We went to Sam Ash and Sam Ash was having a contest and I signed up. She signed up. We end up winning the contest. So I got 300 posters, 1,000 CDs, no money. Literally, I didn't pay a dime for it. Apart from writing the lyrics, everything else, incredible. And then during that time, I used to work at the church. And my pastor used to take my CD and he'll advertise it. This is the guy from my church. Because I was a graphic artist for the church at the time, you know.
And this is how your film has basically got that graphic art taste to it.
Yes.
Because so that's why you learn how to be a businessman by marketing your film.
Exactly.
And then on top of that, graphically designing your CD.
Exactly.
So all you did was implement that into a film.
Exactly.
Into a moving picture.
Yeah. So this was like, rap was everything to me.
So it literally opened that door into the film world.
It opens the door, because I think when I got into my divorce, and that's when everything kind of collapsed with the music, and I was trying to find myself, you know, just, you know, I did this, I did that. Why am I going through this? Why am I losing my job, my house, and everything else? And, you know, I didn't know if I was coming or going. And so I end up going back to school for multimedia, because things begin to shift as a graphic artist. Now they want you to know animation, know how to pick up the phone, know how to build website, all of that. So I had to go back to school just to shape up. And during that time, I was working on that film and employed.
So I think this is, you've mentioned a couple times about, you know, your faith and your culture. And what role did that play in your first short film, Employed?
When I did the first short film, I just saw a commercial on TV and I was really, really inspired to. And it was like a light bulb. It's like, I gotta do that. I knew nothing. I knew nothing about scripts, anything like that. I was just inspired. Like, when I have this thing about me, about intuition, that, you know, when you feel that gut feeling, you gotta go with it. And so that's when I decided to make this film. And the film was just about an immigrant who nobody knows, and he's going around blackmailing people. And that's what this film was about. It was called Employed, a story of a blackmailer. And the tagline was like, your 9-to-5 has just begun. Because once he catch you in action, now he's now you're working to pay him.
So I'm guessing you probably had experience in, you've been blackmailed before.
Blackmail. Because I don't blackmail people.
No. Not, oh my goodness. We're not saying that Mr. Lune Jingi is a wonderful, upstanding person. I mean, have you been blackmailed by other people in the past?
No, I just know, like, you know, just from watching movies, people could be very spiteful, you know, blackmailing. I know what it is when you get caught and doing something wrong and you don't want that truth to come out because of the consequences, and now somebody's pulling the string.
Ooh, and it probably gave you inspiration for your next project, right?
Yeah. So that's how the whole thing came about. And because I'm Haitian and I wanted to make this guy, he's Haitian. So when you're an immigrant, if you enter the country illegally, you have no fingerprints, no nothing. He's a ghost.
Oh, I love your content. And with that, please, we got to get back to that. Because, see, this is, as a filmmaker, guys, if you don't have a story, and he obviously has a unique story to tell, when you're being a filmmaker, it's all about a unique experience being put on film.
Yeah.
With that, guys, we're going to take a very short break. And I mean a very short break, because we got to get back to Mr. Lune and Eugene. I want to know more about this blackmailing. Anyway, we'll see you in a minute.
Welcome to Tell Your Story. It is a masterclass hands-on workshop that is presented by Cine Video Tech and brought to you by Paradoxical Films. Tell Your Story brings various trainings of master workshops involving a hands-on, personal, and virtual experiences. The courses are focused on the craft of filmmaking. Amongst the various film departments coming this fall, crafting cinematic vision and lighting engineers, with the instructor, Mr. Egon Stefan Jr. You will learn how to work with actual film, 16mm, super 16mm, 35mm, and film cameras. In addition, how to load them and change magazines. Furthermore, the workshop will prepare you on how and what it takes to work on set as a first or second assistant camera, the fundamentals of lighting, and the pathway to become a director of photography. Furthermore, coming soon for the spring of next year is Unveiling the Artistry, Mastering Makeup Techniques with the uber-talented special effects makeup artist, Bianca Graziani. She will enrich your knowledge, make you look good, and techniques with professional tools that are implemented in the film industry, commercials, and much more. For information about the classes and updates, everything will be posted on our website at www.paradoxicalfilms.com/tell-your-story.
All right, welcome back, film family. I'm Dana Della Camera, your co-host with host Michelangelo Malachi. And we are here to do it again, Michael.
Malachi.
Oh my God. Okay, it's important to have fun, right? So we are here today having a wonderful time getting to know more about the incredible career of Mr. Lune Jingi, a filmmaker with a Golden Heart and a champion for the community in film. So in the first segment, Lune, you talked a little bit about your experience and your faith and your culture and kind of like how that all worked in helping you to create your first film, Employed. Was that like a crossroads moment for you? Because I know, like, it seemed like maybe, and you could tell me, but when I looked a little bit about what I saw from what you posted on your social media about Employed, it seems like maybe life was imitating art. Was that your crossroads project for you, of where kind of everything culminated, or what was the project that you would say was?
I would say it was project that started my filmmaking, and in terms of diving into something that I had no clue about, not knowing that it was going to brought me here. It's one of those things that, again, I got into it, and from that film, and then everything else came about. I think after I did it, I didn't win the contest, but I had this.
What was the film?
Employed? Oh, I mean.
No, that signaled your crossroads moment.
It was just when it was done, and I was like, I definitely want to do this more and more. I didn't know how, because I knew one thing, that I needed a team. But it was that moment, because I have to say, this took place when I went through my divorce. That was like one of my worst time back then. I was facing a lot. And I think that was my lowest point at the time. And that's why I was researching myself, revamping myself, wasn't really know exactly. And I couldn't go back to the music. And it's just, there was so much going on. And it just, going back to school, I just happened to do that. And I just felt that making movies at the time was the passion at the time where my heart was leading towards.
You know, I think that was, honestly. When you create films, you're basically what's putting in your mind, your heart and your soul onto film. And I think it actually serves as a source of therapy for you, ultimately. If you're able to exacerbate your story on film, mm-hmm. not only is it therapeutic for you, but millions of people or whoever's watching your films can yeah. learn from that. That's why I've always said before, there's a responsibility mm-hmm. of what you put on that screen for others to see.
Big time.
Because you don't realize how much you can learn from it. Mm-hmm. What did you learn? What was the biggest lesson you learned from your lowest moment, your crossroads moment that parlayed your career into filmmaking? What was the biggest lesson you learned?
Biggest lesson, I think, is don't ever give up on that thing that you're passionate about, because I gave up on the music at the time. But the way I gave up on the music, it was more on between me and my ex at the time. She blamed the music for a lot of things, you know, why we end up breaking up. But it was more to that. And because I guess I was going through so much, I felt like my kids was been taking away from me. So I didn't have the energy and passion. I've never quit on anything in my whole entire life. And the music, everybody knew that was my first love. That's what I did. So when I quit on that, I was down. So when I got into filmmaking now, there was no quitting for me. I said, I will never allow myself to give up on anything again. So I had to find a way to keep doing it. And that became my source of therapy, like you said. Because at the time, a friend of mine made me an assistant director on a project that he was working on. He said, you need to get your head off of everything that's going on. Yeah, so that was my therapy at the time.
Lumière et Jeune. We know that your name is French, right? And French is the language of love. It's a very romantic language. Mm-hmm. And I know, so there's a theme with a lot of your movies, which is one of my favorite themes, which is love. Mm-hmm. And that's why this segment is called Love is in the Air. Are you ready?
Yes.
Mister, are you ready to fall in love with this segment?
Hey, I'm a hopeless romantic guy.
Amen. Now, you've created successful films, Love Till It Hurts, Bay Night, The Little Black Book, and the film Queen's King. The film kind of reminds me of like steps of relationship or marriage, right? Mm-hmm. One is the honeymoon, when you're infatuated with each other, mm-hmm. when you can't get enough of each other. You're the love of my life.
Okay, Michael.
So, I'm single, so I'm a little deprived, right? I love that part. Then you have the actual marriage, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have the point where you almost might get a divorce, but then you realize this is the person who I'm meant to be with for the long haul. Now, out of the three movies mm-hmm. that you have made, mm-hmm. Love Till It Hurts, Bay Night, The Little Black Book, and Queen's King, which one is the honeymoon?
The honeymoon, I would have to say Love Until It Hurts.
Because?
It was the beginning. And, you know, just like every other relationship, you Google Gaga, you know, this is it. But you haven't, I mean, you've gone through the fire. Every film has its own unique hurdles, but it's the excitement. It's your first one. It's your first baby.
And that was your first baby?
Yes. Love Until It Hurt was the first baby.
So it really was like a honeymoon.
Yeah. But
a honeymoon.
And I wrote that one. This is the one where I've had multiple hats than any other film because it was my first. I was the director, the DP.
The graphic designer.
The graphic designer, the editor.
Okay.
You know.
Which one was your marriage?
I think number two was like, you know, after you make your first one, now the second one is like, okay, can I make another one again? You fall in love. But it's that same one that I felt like.
Which movie?
Okay. Bay Night.
But it's interesting because, I mean, obviously we know what little black books are. And for our audience, a little black book is one of those books where you may have had interactions with other human beings mm-hmm. and you keep their name
yeah,
in
yes.
a book to remind you of the beautiful time that you had.
Yes. That little, I mean, if you watch the movie, you know, Alexis kept a little black book. That was her secret, her things that she never shared. Her husband never knew about her. This was a film about, you know, when you find someone in a relationship, if you don't bring all your baggages and say, this is who you are. Alexis was an escort. before, but her husband doesn't know that. And then when it backfires is when she meet an old friend suddenly appears and they're trying to pull her back in.
But isn't that like a relationship? We get with someone and then we realize when we finally get in that in the depths of the marriage,
yeah,
who they really are and their past, you can't help but have their past come to the forefront, right? And that's when you realize, right? You may have your down moments. Like, wow, I didn't know that you were this. I didn't know living with you was like this. Yeah. And I don't know if this relationship is going to last. And that's why so many people who get into marriages almost end up in a divorce because they don't know the person they're marrying before they marry them. That's why it's always good to be a friend. So I'm guessing the last one was Queen's King where you realize this is going to be it for my long haul, right?
Yeah, I think Queen's King became everything that I wanted. I have more creative control. Just like the first one, I had more creative control.
So this solidified your vision as a filmmaker.
Yes, because I wrote the first one. I wrote the second one. And the second one, I wrote that less than a month. And it's a series. You know, so that was out of frustration. Because the second one, which is Bay Night, I wanted to throw in the towel. You see what I mean?
And what do you mean throw in the towel?
Throwing the towel, meaning is, you know, I'm a team player. So I invited outside people to come in to help with the vision, but I brought in the wrong people.
What do you mean? Tell us more. This is a life lesson learning moment. What did you learn from that experience, Lunar? Break it down.
For that production, first of all, I'm going to take responsibility for my own actions, first of all, because as a director, you are in charge. And you are the captain of the ship. So anything that happens, however that film looks like, whatever the comments you get, the director is responsible for all of that. And I felt like I was somewhat not in control of that film. I allowed the writer to intervene. I allowed, you know, one of the producers, and there was so much happening. And then we were trying to do it fast in the midst of all of this. Then people within the camp begin to talk with this person, or why should I trust him? And there are people who's been with me for a while. So it became chaotic, people fighting among each other. This was the film that brought tears to my eyes. Like literally, I cried with snotty nose, like because my heart is in the right place. I want everybody to win. And even the writer at the time that came, she was work for hire to write the story. She took the story and go copyrighted to Writers Guild of America. And now I had to fight to get my story back.
Which one of these films was the one you almost ran out of money at the halt production?
Oh, that was Queen's King.
So you almost were divorced from your career, ultimately. Yeah. But then when you got over the hump, ultimately, you realize this can happen and this is what I'm going to be for the long haul.
I do want to interject one moment, though, because you did say something really important, Lunar, is that no matter how nice people are, no matter what the vibe is, no matter how long you've known them, even if they're a family member, you have to protect yourself as an artist and you have to have agreements in place from the beginning. So if you don't have that, then it can cause a lot of hardship later on. And then here he is, he just worked on this whole film. He's responsible for the cast and the crew and the investors and all this stuff. And now he's in an issue, in a conflict with the writer to get the rights now, to get the rights to literally release what everyone has just worked so hard on. So it's really, really important, you know, please, you know, have something in writing, even if it's something simple, make sure you have a paper trail, even if it's an email, what it is. Yeah. And you know, because these types of things can prevent you from putting out your content, and it puts you in a really tough spot, especially when there's investors on, you know, involved, people want their money back, and then it's your responsibility. Yeah. So again, even if it's something simple, make sure that you have the rights, especially when you're working with a writer, to use their scripts. And well, be talking about that in future segments, but I just want to put that note out there because this has happened to me also before. You get excited, right?
Yeah.
You get inspired. You see the vision, and then you're like, "Oh, let's just like forget about that stuff. We'll just produce it. It's gonna be great." And then you're like, "Uh oh," you know, and then it can really put a wrench in the or people just walk away and then they go and produce it without you, even though you just spent 6, 7, 8, 9 months of your life coming up with the vision. So back to you.
It's sad because you know. I'm one of those individuals, I love to create opportunity for everybody that's around me.
You have a big heart and a good heart and you want to make a difference, but and you have to protect yourself first. You put on your own oxygen mask. You still keep your heart and you put on your oxygen mask.
Exactly, right? Exactly. But that film, it's the only film where we literally The last scene, we had, I think, maybe 15 pages to shoot. We ran out of money. We ran out of the person who lent us the house. Well, not lend. We paid like $3,000 for it at the time. The person who rent us the house, they didn't own the house. The owners were coming. So even if we had the money, we still couldn't shoot. So now I had to completely recreate a whole different ending a year and a half later.
How did you fix it? How did you resolve the situation?
Well, at the time, and I think that's when I met my queen. And
what's your queen's name?
Toni Saxentis, man. She's awesome, man.
That's
she's,
right. Shout out to Toni.
She's great, you know, but it's just amazing how, I mean, we took a whole, I didn't know what I was going to do to it. I don't think the film was going to come out because it had no ending. We had beef within the camp and my DP almost sold a red camera. He was frustrated. He didn't know what we were going to do. So we didn't know, like, I had, again, be the captain of the ship and say, okay, guys, let's try to make this happen. And I had to completely redo a whole different ending because we never had that other locations. And then some people that we brought from LA, the cast from Atlanta, you know, we just had to completely change the ending. And people actually end up loving the ending. But I have to say with this film, it's a film that I regret putting out, but I had to put it out, if that makes sense.
What has you say that you regret it?
Because I didn't get 100% of what I wanted to put out. Like Love Until It Hurts, although it was my first and anybody can see any hiccups, but I was satisfied with the writing. Satisfied with, even though we didn't shoot it on a red camera, we shot it on the Lumix GH3, GH4, but we worked with what we had, but I had a better cast. They were very respectful. The team was better. I would say that we went through minor hurdles, but it was better. Queen's King was somewhat even better because now I became a new person.
All right, great. Well, that's a nice segue into getting into Queen's King. So we'll pick up on that right when we return. So we are going to take a short break. So when we return, we will jump into our next segment and we'll hear more about the work of Mr. Lumix. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
We would like to take a moment to thank our partners who helped make this podcast possible. Cine Video Tech has been providing film equipment, training, and services to the film industry both inside and outside the U.S. since 1968. ComTV offers consulting and production services for a wide range of entertainment, marketing, advertising, and commercial projects, and much more.
Welcome back, film family, to the podcast. Now, we're going to get to the nitty-gritty. These are subjects that are a little controversial in the industry, but need to be spoken about, okay? Number one, recognition and identification on screen. They're basically actors out there, right? Who have a 30-second bit on a major feature film with a blockbuster director, right? And they'll go on social media, yeah, and they'll promote, like, my God, I was in this movie. And it was 30 seconds and they were a blur. And you didn't see anything.
Nothing.
Versus being with a independent director or producer, right? And they have a prolific role, mm-hmm, and they do nothing to promote the film.
Absolutely nothing.
Why do you think this happens, and has this happened on any of your past films?
It has happened on the last two of my films. It has happened. And I'm still dumbfounded, if that's the perfect word, just trying to understand their mindset. Yeah, I understand I'm not Tyler Perry. You know, just like you said, Tyler Perry would have them in the film a split second. They were happy. I'm in this film. And then when you see it, it's like they were not there. But you have an opportunity with this film and you don't even take advantage. You know how many people I've casted just because I saw them on Instagram constantly, even if it's a simple skit? That's how I pick majority of my cast members, by the way. So for me, I don't understand the logic of not posting, and I've addressed the issue privately.
Especially in lead roles. We're talking about lead roles here.
Yes, exactly. Leading roles. And I've addressed the issue to a young lady, and she...
What was she upset about?
Because I say to her, I see everyone is posting, but you and couple of other people are not posting the film. And this is someone that I handpicked from another project. So she got upset, disconnected herself from the group chat and blocked me. That was one. And one actually came on the group chat and start the conversation for everybody. Like, this is a private conversation that we're having about you not posting. Funny thing is, this individual took the content, used the content to promote something else that has nothing to do with the film, and then gave a moment in the film that people are not supposed to see. I normally chop up my content and give you what you need. I will take a part of you and give it to you, and you post that. Nah, they just did it themselves.
You mean like building a demo reel for the actor, their best moment? Which
yes.
Is something is
well, it's
valuable.
Not even just for them to post. I create little snippets and stuff like that to promote
like
the
promo
film.
Videos.
Yeah, promo videos. And as a director, to really be honest, I don't ask for much. I ask for at least three basic posts. One, when you get selected, you know, you are in the project. Two, when you are on set, for putting on your makeup, things like that. You know, and then the third one, when the movie is actually either released, the trailer comes out, and that's it. If you choose to post more, awesome. That's all I asked for. They came, some of them, I have actors till today, which I've paid, and that hasn't even post one thing on the film.
So how are you handling it now in your future productions to ensure that your actors are helping to promote the film?
Well, one of the things that we're definitely going to start doing, I've never had people to do behind the scenes for us. I've never had a designated photographer or a designated videographer to do that, and to have, like, let's say, another producer or PA that can organize that while I'm handling the shoot day. You see what I mean? So we need a designated person that says, okay, hey, it's time for you to do an interview. Boom, you know, da-da-da. So they got to take pictures. So that way, they not being forced, but they're being reminded to do that. And then we can have that content.
So what you're saying is that you'll control the content and
yes.
like tag them. So all they have to do is repost it.
Yeah. That's... But at least we have them. Like, let's say like someone goes and say, well, have you done your 10 second or a minute? Then they'll go ahead and reassure that you are doing that. So that means we already have it.
I see. So you're making sure that they are in charge
yeah.
of the cast.
We never actually did that.
I got you.
And then they are, even when we sign a contract, they sign a contract that they got to do three posts. They still don't do it. What are you going to do? Take them to court? You can't take them to court. You don't have time. You barely can raise the funds to make these projects. Now you want to take somebody to court?
So essentially, I think they're like shooting themselves in the foot, right?
Oh, yes.
Because the more you post about a project that you're starring in,
yeah.
obviously the better opportunities you're getting in the future. And you're also promoting the film so then you can have the financial resources to make other films.
Exactly.
So I don't understand why the community or some people in the community would do that versus helping out someone become the filmmaker they should be
yeah,
in the future.
It's a partnership. Yeah. We need each other. You need content, right? You need exposure. I need content. I need exposure. We both need, as a director, and we both have the same
now,
goals.
Talking about partnership, right? Mm-hmm. I know there are certain companies, I might have to say the name, yeah. but this is say you have a film and you put yourself on either Netflix or mm-hmm. Tubi or one of these major platforms, right? And the licensing agreements aren't in your favor. So basically mm-hmm. the partnership works more for the company mm-hmm. versus the individual. Have you ever faced any issues with licensing agreements, and how important are licensing agreements to the filmmaker?
Licensing agreements is extremely important. One of the biggest thing I did when I got into the industry is started learning about the business. Contracts. What's a good contract? What does the percentages looks like? So I got familiar with that. Like, I know, for instance, Netflix screwed the guy who created Squid Game. Literally, if I'm not mistaken, Netflix gave him about under $200,000 for the rights. That's all they got, $200,000. Under that, they almost made $1 billion, and they own the rights to Squid Game. You see what I mean?
Gotcha.
But that's desperation. I would have never done it. That's one thing I knew about. I knew in the early stage, Netflix will never be in my favor unless they signing me up for a Netflix original, then I would be on the forefront. Like, a lot of people will say, oh, so you're going to be on Netflix. I'm like, it's the Holy Grail. I don't go for that.
And I have to admit, I love Netflix. I watch
yeah.
so many movies out there.
I love it too.
I love it, yeah.
But being on Tubi or Amazon Prime
yeah.
is just the same as being on Netflix. You still have to market it, let people know you're there. They don't know you're there. They don't know.
So
unless you're
like
a Netflix
issue of
original, yes. you're on the forefront. Nobody knows you're there. Nobody knows you're there. So it's the same exact thing. It depends on What are the percentages? What, and then you renting your movie to Netflix, by the way. So if they rent it from you for 2 or 3 years, you literally cannot, I can't go to Hulu. The license, you have to think about.
Break it down.
You have to think about when you're licensing your film.
Yes.
To a studio or Netflix, think of it like a pizza pie. Every slice is a different licensing because you have AVOD, like you have, like, for instance, if you look at Tubi, it's ad revenue. The filmmaker gets paid by the ad. So that's one separate license.
Which versus... Netflix just added ads.
Yep, exactly. Because they realize Tubi's making a whole lot of money. They're not the only one that's doing that because Amazon is doing that as well.
Yeah,
because
they have to make money.
They have to make revenue.
Because they want more of the slices.
Yeah.
Yeah. The pies, that's what it is. Because you're not really selling the whole pie. You're selling, because you can sell a certain licensing here and another one here. It's just same like how do you get on some of these planes? Delta, that's a different type of license. You see what I mean? So it can get complex, but one of the things that I do know, a good somewhat deal is on an independent level is I would say you'll be lucky if you get 70-30, 70-35. If you get somewhere, that's kind of like, okay. You know, it's not bad at all.
So for our audience, 70 means 70% for you or 70% for the company?
Well, you'll be lucky if you get it in reverse. They sometimes take 70 and they give you 35, or sometimes it could be the other way around too. But I've had a company offered me right now here in South Florida, and I know they're putting a lot of films out there, man. And they reach out to me. Actually, somebody suggested that I, you know, give my film, you know, let them see my film.
Yes.
They were really impressed. But what they were offering, they offered me like $5,000. No, it wasn't even $5,000. I think it was $2,500 in advance. Then they want the film for 10 years, which is the lifespan of a film when you really think about it. And then they give you a marketing fee of $25,000 that they have to recoup. They're going to spend it to do all the marketing.
$25,000?
Yeah, $25,000.
Which you could do your own marketing.
Exactly.
Dana, how do you do your own marketing?
What? Oh, don't. No, I want to talk. This is not about Dana's marketing 101 right now.
No, because I want
to
know.
No, I want to actually get to the next question, which is how you, for Loving Till It Hurts, you said that you were able to create a financial cushion that later funded future work. So how did you do that? Because you essentially had to market it and get distributed. And I know you are on some of the streaming platforms. So how were you able to do that? And what did you do to create?
Are you saying like when I first got my first issue?
How do you make money? Essentially, how are you making money from your films and the deals
that you
can parlay the money you're making from your current projects to fund future ones?
Well, just like how I explained it to you. Well, they have aggregators, but I don't like aggregators much because they become the middleman. I've heard a story where somebody wanted to get into Netflix. And so they went through an aggregator. And I think sometimes there could be a fee of $1,500 that you pay them to try to get you there. They're trying to sell your film to Netflix. Then Netflix be like, well, I don't want it. In return, they're supposed to return back the $1,500, but they keep like the $200, you know, for the fee that they charge. Some people didn't even get that feedback. And so now they end up losing. And I've heard those stories before. So I always knew not to go through that. But I found my distributor by myself, just researching online. I just took a chance with them because once I found that individual, I kept Googling the name and to find out where they at, where they're speaking and what they're saying. And the narrative was the same. And I remember she said, a filmmaker can actually make, without even pushing, just promoting it on social media, the minimum they can make is $10,000 a quarter. And I was like, that sounds great. And I actually took my chance with them. And that's how I landed on my first distribution deal.
Did this have to do with Love Till It Hurts?
Love Until It Hurts.
I remember that you said that was the first time.
Yeah, that was the first. That was the first one
you needed to create. Yeah. How did you distribute
But
yourself?
But I still didn't know, but even with Love Until It Hurts, I haven't received enough to say, okay, now I'm going to take from it and make the next film. But it gives me some breathing room to be creative. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because if you don't have a roof over your head, you can't be creative. You can't think. You're stressed out, you know, so that's extremely important. That film allowed me to pay the actors, which I had no idea how I'm going to pay them. But because I'm the type of individual that I respect artists, and actors, so I put them all in what they call a deferred contract. If the film make money, not knowing where I'm going with this film. See what I mean?
Gotcha.
So you pay them on the back end.
It was good a year later to be able to call them back and say, hey guys, we got money. Felt real good.
We got money.
Yeah. Felt real good. Yes. It felt real, real, real good.
We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Dear audience, we have a great announcement to make. Okay, from August 5th, 2024, you will be able to enjoy our show visually on our brand new YouTube channel called Paradoxical Films. And as you already know, the show's name is Cinema Pathway with our host, Michael Angelo Malachi, and co-host, Ms. Dana Della Camera. So please, guys, subscribe, click, like, and follow us on all of your favorite digital platforms. The episode will come live once a month. If you enjoy listening to our podcast, and we hope that you do, we hope, right? Support us by subscribing to your favorite podcast platform and giving us a rating. Then head to our online store at www.paradoxicalfilms.com/shop. Again, that's www.paradoxicalfilms.com/shop, where you can purchase Cinema Pathway gear, including t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, and more. Also, don't forget, follow us on Instagram at cinema_pathway_podcast. Again, that's cinema_pathway_podcast for all the behind-the-scenes photos and more.
Welcome back, film family. Dana has come with some, I mean, I don't have the experience that Dana has. Her name is Dana De La Camera, and she has that name for a reason. So thank you so much. And the experience that you have, Mr. Lumiere Eugene, really is indispensable. Thank you for being here. You're truly welcome. Now, we got to get to the nitty-gritty again, right?
Nitty-gritty.
All right. You have a production company called Lunaverso Productions. Not Universal, but Lunaverso Productions with an L, right? Yeah. So tell us, what is the future for Lunaverso Productions, and what is the ultimate mission that it wishes to achieve?
Ooh, that's a big one. This, I would say, the vision is bigger than Lunaverso Production. That also includes Tonice, which is my girlfriend, because she has a nonprofit organization called Silent Cries. And, you know, we've always spoke about joining together and owning a studio, and not just a workspace, but where, you know, where we can actually do our own projects in there. And, you know, just do pretty much everything what a normal production house do, pretty much, and where we can actually continue to do workshops, because that's something that we were doing in the beginning in my early stage of the career, helping actors, having acting workshop. I would get the actors to speak, you know, so a lot of these things, we feel like education is extremely important. So that has always been a big part of Lunaverso Production, and also Tony's Exantis as well. So that's one of the bigger plans that we do have. And also we want to become a big production house. It will happen at its given season and time. It's just because the vision is really big, and we really want to reach out to a lot of people in the community. And I'm very passionate about the Black community. A lot of times, you know, again, when I say the Black community, it doesn't exempt anyone else. Yeah. It's just that, you know, it's the focus that God had put in my heart, you know, being that I'm Haitian, being that I'm Black, and it's a deficit in America. And it's something that I see a lot of social issues within the Black communities that needs to be addressed. I see how I can become effective through film. Film is a medium that is so powerful that any positive message, strong message that you can use to help an upbringing of people, to make them better, to bring self-awareness so they can live the best version of themselves, is important. So that is why, you know, I focus within that. And Queens King is the project that I would say that brought me to this point of knowing my full purpose in the film industry. Before, it was just following my passion and making films. But when I got to the third film, that's when I'm realizing that, you know, uniting the culture through Black cinema is my focus.
I know you've probably heard of them before, but have you ever heard of the Haitian Film Association? I think you should partner with them. I really think so.
I have. Like I said, a lot of us are just so departed. You know, the independent film industry, there's just so much going on. I don't think a lot of us try to mingle, like try to support one another. Like Dana is having something. I'm going to come out and support her. Not just because she's just a great person. She loves the art within itself, but she needs the support as well. So I go out and support other filmmakers as well. It's not just about the money. Again, guys, don't focus on the money. I tell people, do not focus on the money. The money is the reward that you're going to get because you're so passionate in doing it. And if you treat it like a business, it will be a business. If you treat it like a hobby, it will be a hobby.
So, okay. So I just want to kind of go back to what your next project is for Lunar Reversal Productions. So tell us about High Value Man and what was the inspiration for this project? Where are you in the production?
What is your definition of a high value man?
Yes, yes.
The High Value Man. High Value Man is such a trending topic, you know, and everyone has their own definition to what a high value man is. And I can honestly say the inspiration came from, there was an ex-girlfriend of mine who introduced me to a guy named Kevin Samuel. And he died, of course. He's one of those relationship coach. And I never knew who Kevin Samuel was, but he talks to a lot of, you know, a lot of African-American women and how, you know, just prepping them and stuff like that. And a lot of people have different views and how they want a man that makes six figures or more. And the average black man doesn't make that much. So they have this probably this white picket fence of how, you know, how things should be, but it's unrealistic ideal of relationship, you know? So, and if you look at social media, it's a trending topic. And it's devastating because I think people are sort of losing what's really valuable. And people are so focused so much on money these days, especially when it comes to relationship. And so I wanted to come out with a film and just have the basis, the idea of the film in a way where it talks about what's really valuable, but it's not against men or men, but allowing people to see themselves within the film. And hopefully they can grab something that would sort of change their mindset for the better, if that makes sense. So there's a lot within this film that I can't really say, you know, and it's a film that was supposed to be done within sort of like one or two locations. Through the process of writing the project, of course, I did wrote like 40 pages of the project, and then I worked with an outside writer, my friend Marcos, that I actually met from a different project. So he helped finish, write the screenplay and everything. So I'm really excited about that project.
You know what was my definition of a high value man? Mm-hmm. Someone with a lot of integrity and character. And I think you're brimming with that. Now, we talked about something, but we have to bring it here or else my heart will explode.
Yes.
You literally stopped one of your productions just to help another one. You were literally in the middle of producing. You stopped it to help another one finish theirs. The question is, what do you think about healthy competition in this industry and the value of creating a community where people do selfless things like that to help others grow, essentially making your production company grow?
Not too many people do that. Like right now, if everybody in this room would decide, you know what, let's work together and make a film. The biggest problem we all going to have is which one's going to go first. Everybody want to be first. We all can be first. You see what I mean? We all have to have an understanding that there's only so much film you can make a year, especially on the independent level, especially at the quality of the level that you want to make this film. So for me, I always understand teamwork. I understand being selfless, being a servant first, and then through that, I will get what I'm looking for. So if I've always believed that what you do for men, God will turn around and do for you.
But was there something that specifically had you want to stop your own production to help this other person?
Well, Love and Telehertz, I knew for a fact that I'm going to need a team. And at the time, my friend Genji at the time, he had his own production company, Godson's Production, at the time that he was doing, and he called me to be part of that. And so whatever I was doing, I just kind of put that on hold. So we built a momentum together through his company. I was the person that was bringing out the image for his stage plays at the time. So I would chop these little snippets. People actually thought they were films, but they were stage plays. And
I was helping him build that. Mm-hmm. But through that, we built a relationship between him and I and his ex-wife at the time. And that's, we were the three team. And that's how we started working on Love Until It Hurts. You see what I mean? But most people would be, you know what? I got my thing over here. Sorry, I can't help you. You see what I mean? So, but again, it takes that special person to really understand. See, the thing is too, most people always think when they give themselves up or they share whatever knowledge and idea with someone else, they're actually losing. No, you're gaining. You're not losing.
Well, nobody can, even if they run with it, they can never tell your story the way that you would tell it.
Your gift is your gift.
So, I mean, it's... Yeah, if the story, if it was given to you in your heart, it's meant for you. And even, you know, everybody's going to have a different perception of it.
Of course.
You know, so.
Linnaire, before we exit, we always ask this question, and I think this is the perfect time to ask it.
I'm not going to rap.
Oh, no.
Okay.
If you rap, we'll sing. How about that? Deal? How do you wish to be remembered?
I want people to remember me as... someone who had the willingness to push through the pain, no matter what happened, no matter what the circumstances that happened, because I felt like through the whole process of my journey, I was working productively through pain. Because I remember during Silent Cries segment we were having, one of the questions that was asked to me, have I ever fell into depression or something like that through everything that I was going through? And I said, if I did, I didn't know if I did, because working through the pain was my thing that I did. So everything that I was feeling, me working was how I was going through everything, if that makes sense. You know, so for me, I want to be remembered as someone who had that resilience of not giving up, of whatever that they can set their mind into, that they can really, really achieve it. Your belief system is going to be literally the difference between if you're going to be successful or not. What is it that you believe about yourself? So, and I try to teach my kids that.
If you had to sum up all your works thus far in one word, what would that be?
I'm a soldier. We always at war. I am a soldier because one point in my life, you know, I was facing jail, you know, because I was behind with child support. I had 30 days to come up with $300, which is peanuts, or I'm going to go to jail for 120 days. And I'm sitting here. I love my kids. My kids love me. And I'm sitting in this courtroom and I'm like, God, I can't believe I'm going to jail. And I didn't commit a crime. I didn't do this, but I'm going to jail. I'm facing jail because of hardship. I'm behind my rent. Everything. And I think this was the moment I asked God, I'm like, God, I can't do this no more. You might as well just take my life.
You know, it reminds me of your character. Go with me on this, okay? Character. It's not just a part played by an actor. It is a mental and the moral qualities distinctive to the uniqueness of the individual. I pose this question to you guys. Have you ever stopped to think of not what your resume looks like on a professional paper, right? But what your true resume looks like on your entire life in general. Art does imitate life. Film imitates life. And if your entire life were this played on that screen, what would you see? In this film industry, what you do behind the camera, like we talked about before, right, is just as important as you do in front of it. It can be the difference between a door opening to a career saturated with fulfillment, purpose, part of the success of Mr. Lumiere et Jean, right, stems from his excellent portrayals of the human spirit, experiences, and its character. His character off screen when no one's looking is more impressive than even that. By stopping his projects to help finish others, advancing and elevating the culture by sacrificing his resources, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, Lunar has expanded his reach far beyond what I even think he thought was possible. Elevate others, and you will be elevated higher than you ever thought possible. This serves as an excellent and limitless source of inspiration for your work in film. So ask yourself, Lumiere, in my work in film, am I building an army of one, a monument to myself, or am I building a vast and diverse community working together for the goal of producing quality work that will last for generations into eternity?
Thank you for wrapping us up, Michael. So on that note, I want to, Lunar, thank you so much for being here. It's been truly a pleasure. And I know we're all here inside of the commitment of, you know, sharing everything that we know and learning from each other and continuing to learn. I know I'm always learning. I don't know everything there
we're
is.
Students.
And, you know, I'm a student of life for sure. And I really want to thank you. And I want to give you an opportunity to any shame shameless plugs? And where can the people find you out and connect with you? Because they should be connecting with you, if they're not. So,
Lunar Versal Film. First name, L-U-N-E-R. Versal Film.
On IG, website, Facebook,
that's on
Twitter,
IG, and then there's Director Lunar Eugene. Director _ Lunar _ Eugene.
Awesome. Yeah, so. Please go and check out his work. See it all online. You can also check it out on Tubi and Amazon Prime. Am I missing any?
Nah, just go on Tubi, check it out, especially Love Until It Hurts. It's a project I'll never forget.
I'm Dana Della Camera. This is
Michelangelo Melica.
And
Luna Eugene.
That's a wrap, film family. We'll see you next time.
To our listeners, thank you again for joining us in the Cinema Pathway podcast today. I'm your host, Michelangelo Melica, and co-host, Miss Dana Della Camera. Our producer and director is the lovely Juliet Asson, and our associate producer is Victor Hugo Pereira. The executive producer and editor is Freddie R. Rodriguez. This was a presentation by Paradoxical Films, and please visit our website at www.paradoxicalfilms.com. Again, that's www.paradoxicalfilms.com for more information about today's podcast. And you can also email us if you like at cinemapathway@paradoxicalfilms.com. Again, that's cinemapathway@paradoxicalfilms.com, where you can send all comments, suggestions for all future episodes. Lights out!